House Revenue Committee will come to order. We have two items on our agenda today, a work session on House Bill 2031 and a work session on House Bill 2707. And we have a number of pieces that, to talk about, so we're going to... We're going to open a work session on House Bill 2031. And Paul, I think you wanted to explain the bill and then hear from our other economists about it.
Mr. Chair, I have a one sheet, kind of a summary. Actually, this is a summary of what's amendments to two bills, 2031 and 2707, but the two bills are tied together, and you'll see
and
how they're connected.
And let me interrupt just one second. These bills are the bills that are designed to deal with the agreement that was reached last week in, among the leadership. 2031 will no longer be a bill about county tax collectors, but instead will be a part of this agreement. 2707 is on the, generally on the same subject that it was on before with some amendments. I'm sorry, Paul, go ahead.
I'll just assure everyone that the bill on the county tax collectors, we've got that amended into another bill, so you'll see that one shortly. In terms of the one sheet handout, I just broke it into three categories on the key elements that were announced last week. The first is an increase in the corporate kicker estimate or the corporate income tax revenue estimate. Remember, that's the mechanism used in 2707. Of that increase, with the current projection you got last week, the kicker's estimated at $315 million. Of that, assuming those estimates are correct, $290 million would go into a rainy day fund that's established in 2707. Up to 1% of the general fund ending balance starting in 09-11. There was some issue about that on the Senate side. It starts in 09-11, so it would be the ending balance following 07-09. That's about $138.4 million as an estimate. And another element that was not in the earlier version, interest earnings imputed to the rainy day fund account within the general fund. Then there's some characteristics on the rainy day fund there that are a little different than the original 2707. Essentially, the economic and budgetary triggers are the same as the Education Stability Fund, and as in the case of the Education Stability Fund, a three-fifths vote is required in both chambers to access the fund. The fund is capped at 7.5%. Revenue above the cap will be going back to the general fund. This amendment you will have shortly. And no more than two-thirds of the fund balance can be allocated in any one biennium. So those are all elements of the amendment you'll see in 2707. The other revenue actions are contained in House Bill 2031, and you have that amendment before you, 2031-1. And what that does is establish a new corporate minimum tax for C corporations from $25 to $50,000, starting with the 1107 corporate tax years beginning on or after 1107. We estimate that will generate $152.7 million. And also in the bill is an increase in exemption level inheritance taxes to $2 million per estate, up from $1 million, what it currently is. That's also affected with for decedents on or after January 1, 2007. And then there's a one-time credit to C corporations with sales less than $5 million in 2007 tax year, so it's a one-year credit. We estimate that will reduce revenue by $24.8 million. And if you turn over on the other side of this, you can see how all of this works together in terms of the revenue impacts. You can see the corporate minimum, which is in House Bill 2031, and the inheritance tax, both 07 and 09-11, is in 2031. The ending fund balance is 09-11 impact. The transfer from the corporate kicker credit in 2707, you get a transfer into the general fund as a part of that kicker as a result of the increase in the corporate income tax estimate. And then in 2031, you have a one-time small corporation credit. So those offset one another, leaves it a net wash for the general fund. So the general fund would gain $110 million in 07-09 primarily through the new corporate minimum tax. And in 09-11 would lose $33 million. On the rainy day fund that's established, there's an estimated revenue stream flowing in of $316.1 million. We've estimated that interest on the fund, even though it's going to be retained within the general fund, DAS has been directed to keep a separate calculation for the rainy day fund, and we estimated that at $26 million in 07-09. And then so you'd carry $316 million forward into 09-11, assuming you didn't access the fund. And you get the ending balance transfer, another $41 million in interest earnings. So your balance on July 1, 2011, we estimate would be $495.5 million. I can talk a little bit about 2031. And we have Chris has done the corporate income tax pieces to this. Mazin did the work on the estate tax adjustment. And if you look at your dash one amendments, 2031-1, you can see that in section one, there's a new two sub B, which is, that's the increase in the exemption level for adjusted taxable estates for $2 million. That is an increase, as I said earlier, from $1 million. And that, again, begins in the 2007 year. If you look in Section 2, which is on page 3, again, you can see the reference to the schedule that we've been operating under with the estate tax. The estate tax has gone under a series of adjustments as the federal law has changed and the state has responded. And you can see where the $2 million comes in under the new sub-E there. And you can also see the start date in Section 3, decedents who die on or after January 1, 2007. The next section, Section 4, lays out the schedule for the new corporate minimum tax. Keep in mind that this new corporate minimum is an alternative minimum. So corporations would be doing two calculations. They would be doing a calculation of their tax liability under the current corporate income tax, and then they would be doing a calculation based on the minimum, and then they would pay the higher of the two. So you can see the schedule there. It starts off for sales less than $50,000 is $25 and goes up to taxpayers whose sale for the tax year of more than $25 million is $50,000 is the top amount. If you look at Section 6, which starts about midway down page 5, you can see that for the tax year that begins January 1, 2007, and before January 1, 2008, in other words, a one-year change, C corporations that have sales in Oregon sales less than $5 million, will be allowed a credit against taxes that would otherwise be due, and that credit will equal 67%, which is the current corporate kicker credit estimate from your latest forecast.
Now, that's from their net taxes after all other credits. Is that right?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Just the same as the current kicker works. The calculation that we have made from that 67% based on our analysis of returns is that would be a revenue impact of $24.8 million. That's why we have that transfer to the general fund in the other bill. And then, as we talked about before, these are all tax-related measures, so they, of course, cannot have an emergency clause on them, so they take effect on the 91st day after signing up.
Thank you. Gentlemen, did you plan to also talk about 2707? Just this one. Okay, go ahead. And committee members, as we go along, if you have questions, please be sure to interrupt. The point now is to make sure we understand what these amendments mean. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Chris Allenite, Legislative Revenue Office. I don't know that there's a whole lot to add after Paul's description of the details of the court minimum tax and the 67% additional credit that are included in the sections. So I guess I would just open it up to questions that you may have.
Thank you. Mazin?
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, Mazin Malik, Legislative Revenue Office. You know, my regular portfolio is the fund taxes. This is the least fun in my portfolio. I don't like to say, if you die, I'm your guy. You know.
Thank you.
But having said that, the estate taxes, as you know, there's a lot of uncertainty with those. Contrary to proverbs in colloquial English that says only two certain things are taxes and death, so you think death taxes are probably very certain. On the contrary, they're not. There is a lot of volatility of what comes from one year to the next, but on the average we have looked at the amounts. That's where we're thinking about 20 million. We're removing about one third with the increase of the threshold from 1 million to 2, we're removing about one third of the estate taxes that occur every year. And the rest are paid by a lot smaller base, if you will, because it's a higher estate. Now, remember, we're all connected to the federal law, 1997 law. And the question that I've heard most frequently is, why are not we connected to the 2001 law? Remember, if we were, we would have no estate tax collection as of today in Oregon, and it will not come back until 2011. And that's.
Thank you. Questions, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Referring to 2031 on the -1 amendments, section 6 on page 5, this is basically a mini kicker for those corporations under $5 million. They would calculate the tax, and then they would calculate the 67% estimated 67%, and we're actually fixing that now at 67% in this bill. In lieu of actually going to the end of the biennium and calculating the what amount would have otherwise been a kicker, is it still possible then after I have calculated the tax which is due less the kicker, then that number is still calculated is still then compared against the minimum taxes that are lined out in section 4? And if the minimum tax is greater, then I've in effect overcome the kicker and don't get the kicker.
Vice Chair Butler, the minimum tax is an alternative calculation. So you would go through and do your calculation with a kicker, and if that generated a lower tax liability than the minimum tax, then you'd pay the minimum.
And the second question I have, and I guess there's some testimony that may come forward on this, and that is the evening issue, that the leveling and the cliff problems that we have when we have taxes that are calculated. I guess my concern is this. If I invite a corporation to the state of Oregon in biotech, and they're engineering something that's brand new, no anticipated net profits, but have $25 million in sales, they will pay a $25,000 minimum tax, even though they owe no other federal or state tax. If their net profits, as they're starting up a corporation, and we're assuming a C corporation, because they will have corporate partners, they will have trust partners, they will have foreign partners. That's how we get new businesses to Oregon, is we invite the joint venture companies to bring those folks here to put their profits into the state of Oregon. But the moment that they take a contract for another $100 contract above the $25 million, then they would owe not $25,000, but they would owe $50,000 without any leveling effect in there. Is that correct?
Yes, they would be into the next category, and then they would pay the minimum tax for that next higher category.
Have you done some smoothing calculations, Paul, to actually smooth this out in any way so that we could overcome these cliffs and these kinds of pitfalls, cliffs and valleys?
Let me interrupt there and just simply say that the purpose of these amendments is to put into effect the agreement that was generally reached by the leadership. Paul has done some calculations at my request to see what a smoothing system would look like, but at this point we don't contemplate any changes in this bill for the purpose of that, so that we can comply with the agreement that we've generally, keep faith with the agreement we have generally reached on this bill.
And, Mr. Chair, I would say that I'm not part of leadership. The last that we had seen of this bill was as we were talking about taxable profits, and the amounts at $250,000 versus $500,000 and above, and this certainly breaks faith with the $500,000 being the gross sales, because I don't know of a corporation that has $500,000 in gross sales that has $500,000 in net profits. So I'm having difficulty with that because I'm feeling like that if there was a way to overcome that cliffhanger and keep the revenue the same, and I think that is possible to do that, then that would certainly be an improvement to this particular piece of legislation.
Thank you, Representative. Were there other questions for the economists? If not, it's my intention. I see that there are three members in the room, and it would be my intention to hear from them if they want to be heard, and then I take testimony from one other person, and then proceed on to the work that we had to do on the bill. Representative Hunt, did you want to be heard? And Senator Deckert and Senator Morris are here. Do you gentlemen want to be heard?
Regarding Senator Morris.
All right, well, we'll hear from Senator Morris as soon as Representative Hunt is finished. If you can stick around a little bit. Thank you. Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Just wanted to provide any of
the... I'm sorry to interrupt.
For the record. Representative Dave Hunt.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The issues we've got before us, obviously, House Bill 2707 will look extremely familiar to you, since you all just processed that about a week and a half ago. I handed out an actual copy of the layperson terms agreement, so you can lay that alongside the actual Dash 8 amendment, I think it is, as well as the Dash 1 amendment of 2031. But this one pager that I just handed out here will give you a sense in layperson's terms of what was actually agreed to. I mean, fundamentally, on the rainy day fund and the corporate kicker, our real focus and goal, and I think successful outcome, was to split the difference between the committee bill and the minority report. Obviously, the goal all along has been to come to an agreement that we could actually agree to inside the building that would not require a referral to the ballot, which is both costly and not really a good demonstration of our leadership. It also pushes it off till May instead of deciding it when it could be decided. The other obvious goal is a lot of members of the business community said they would much prefer a one-time redirection, which is still envisioned in this bill, as opposed to a permanent redirection of the corporate kicker funds, which would be on the ballot. So if you just look down this issue, you know, the size of the rainy day fund, you'll remember in the original committee bill, it was 10%, and the minority report was 5%. This splits the difference at 7.5%. The interest was actually not discussed in either the committee bill or the minority report. That is just added in here because there was consensus around the need to do that and to keep the interest funds in the rainy day fund. The replenishment source, we went with the version that was in the committee bill, which is 1% out of the ending fund balance. The single biennium extraction cap, we went with the version that was in the minority report, which is no more than 2/3 extraction out of the rainy day fund at any one time. And then the triggers really split the difference in terms of having, instead of just economic triggers or a 2/3 trigger, this now has both an economic trigger and a 3/5 requirement in terms of legislative vote. The core issue there in terms of the starting place of having the first deposit into the fund be from this biennium's corporate kicker is still in there. Based on the latest revenue forecast that occurred actually after the deal was struck, that should end up, correct me if I'm wrong, Paul, but I believe a net of about $290 million into the rainy day fund once the small business exemption is taken off of just under $25 million. So we'll end up with very sizable rainy day fund to start from the corporate kicker. The other change that was made related to that was the small business exemption is actually now really targeted at businesses because it's now actually based on gross sales instead of based on a kind of another calculation that gets at net taxable income. So that's all in 2707. And then the other two issues which were brought on the table, as you can see on your sheet there, the corporate minimum tax. We took the version came out a few weeks ago that was part of the House Republican Oregon Stability and Investment Plan. And I did want to comment in terms of Representative Butler's comments earlier. That proposal all along was based on Oregon sales. So the corporate minimum tax restructuring proposal that was proposed two or three weeks ago was always based on Oregon sales. There was no change in that. The only place where there was a change was in the mini kicker, the small business exemption from the corporate kicker. That was changed from net taxable income to Oregon sales. But the corporate minimum tax proposal that was here and is still in what's now the Dash 1 amendments to 2031 has always been based on Oregon sales. And then also in 2031 is the inheritance tax exemption that was mentioned earlier that doubles that from $1 million to $2 million without the reconnect. So I think obviously this was reached in a very quick way, very bipartisan way, House and Senate, Republicans and Democrats coming together. Frankly, I think resolving some pretty significant issues for this session and doing it on the last day of February. So I think we've got a proposal here which may not be perfect, but a proposal that's really going to make a huge stride forward in terms of establishing a rainy day fund with some real boundaries around it, in terms of making some significant deposits in the next 2 years into that rainy day fund, in terms of increasing the $10 corporate minimum tax that's not been raised since 1931, and in terms of increasing the exemption on the estate tax, which has also not been raised in many years. So I think we've got a package here that comes to you with strong bipartisan support. And again, we are still on the same clock we were on before of trying to beat to the House floor the SGR 3, which is still coming, still on track in terms of the permanent redirection to the ballot. So with your good work and some rule suspensions, we will be able to beat that measure to the floor and have a good end product, I think. Be happy to take any questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Are there questions for Representative Hunt? Yes, Representative Berger.
Thank you. Representative Hunt, I appreciate the hard work that went into this proposal, and I also appreciate your comment that it's not perfect, because, frankly, it isn't perfect. And I think that Representative Butler has brought up some of the issues that, believe me, I'm hearing from my local businesses around the cliff issue, if you will. In crafting this joint proposal, is there opportunity to resolve some of these less than perfect issues around the cliffs and the impact it's having on even small businesses that by making this based on Oregon sales? I'm speaking of the corporate minimum, of course.
You bet. Chair Barnhart, Representative Berger. I think certainly in terms of the timeline we've got now of, again, beating SJR 3 to the House floor, in terms of implementing this package, I think there is not the opportunity to make amendments to this. I think in terms of doing something along the lines of what Representative Butler talked about, that was done in a revenue-neutral way. The beauty about revenue-neutral votes is all of a sudden the supermajority is no longer required. It's only, and I'm sure Representative Butler was not proposing increasing the corporate minimum tax any further. It was just a revenue-neutral situation that would flatten out. Instead of having these significant jumps where you're in one level and then you jump all the way up to the next, of having a much more rounded out effect. I think, you know, based on the leadership of this committee and the committee chaired in the other body by Senator Deckard, I think there are always opportunities to make those kinds of thoughtful changes.
Can I follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
So what you're basically saying is that there is the opportunity to change this session, to take away some of the cliff and make this a more fluid stratification, since you don't like the word stratigraphy, of the corporate minimum tax. Is that what you're saying? And do you envision this something that would happen here in this committee, or is this something that would have to happen in the Senate after this has all gone through? I'm real concerned because I'm not exactly driven. I'm not sure what the hurry is with regard to what's coming out of the Senate. That hurries you, but I'm not sure that it hurries me.
Sure. Chair Barnhart, Representative Berger, I really do not see that opportunity as part of 2707 or 2031. I think with the active engagement of the business community as well as the leadership of the two revenue committees, I would certainly be very supportive of efforts to round this out to make it a more gradual curve instead of a more cliff-oriented curve. I think the two core values I would say that would be critical to maintain in any of those would be, one, the net revenue generated, which is $152 million in this change, and not changing the low end from the $25, not raising the low end above $25. Other than that, I think there's a real opportunity for this committee and the business community to come up with a proposal, which I would be happy to support.
One more question,
yes,
if you would indulge me. As far as that net revenue change, isn't it true that this proposal and the numbers that were sort of bandied about, remind me of the timing, was worked out before the last revenue forecast, and so the numbers actually going in are higher than the numbers that were sort of batting about in this proposal. So wouldn't that leave a little flexibility in there?
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, the reason that we specifically locked in the $24.8 million estimate in terms of the small business exemption was so that would be a known fact. If the revenue forecast went up or down, it wouldn't impact that. There would still be a guaranteed $25 million that would go back to those small companies in the form of the corporate kicker. But you are absolutely correct. Now that the revenue forecast has demonstrated that it's up, we'll really get the best of both worlds. We'll get that $24.8 million going back to small businesses, again, now based on sales, so you'll get a much more Oregon-focused, small business-focused group in that. But you also get $290 million into the rainy day fund instead of the $270 million that we estimated before.
One more time?
Yes, please.
But in actuality, at the time, you were not at $290 million. You, when this agreement was made, you were at $275 million or something like that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, the total was 275. The total is now 316.
315. Yeah, so
correct.
So in actuality, the numbers have gone up. So there is some sort of room to work with this a little bit.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, if we keep the kind of the two tables separate, the rainy day fund, corporate kicker table, and then the corporate minimum estate tax table, the revenue forecast change impacts the corporate the corporate kicker table, which means there'll be more money flowing into a rainy day fund directly. That doesn't mean there's going to be more money over here available in the general fund, because that corporate kicker money is not going to touch the general fund. A chunk of it's going to go directly back to small businesses based on sales, and the overwhelming chunk is going to go into the rainy day fund. So it's not like that money would be available to help cure an ill over on the corporate minimum side of the ledger.
One thing I should note while we're talking about that is that the agreement referred to $975 million corporate revenue estimate, which is higher than the amount of the current estimate. So the estimate that we are dealing with on the amount going into the fund is consistent with the agreement that was made.
I understand, Mr. Chair. If I could just comment,
yes.
I understand that an important collaborative deal has been made, and I understand the need to honor that that sort of leadership-driven deal, but I would go back to Representative Hunt's original comments, which is it is not perfect. Mm-hmm. And this is my one opportunity to stand up and say there are issues around it that I am extremely bothered by, and so are business people who in a heartbeat are emailing me from, and these aren't big corporations, these are my local Chamber of Commerce folks, and I'm very sensitive to wait a minute, you made a deal, but what about us? And so I want to bring these things to the table, and I appreciate your indulgence.
Thank you, Representative Berger. We hear it loud and clear. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Same kinds of issues. Dave, was it, Representative Hunt, was it contemplated that what would happen is that there would be a new minimum tax in the state of Oregon, that minimum tax would, even to companies that would have $25 million in sales, that would have Oregon sales, but would have also large child care facilities for their employees in the state of Oregon, could in effect be penalized as a result of that and wouldn't get the 67% kicker back, but in fact would still be paying a minimum tax. That was contemplated as you set your deal down.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Butler, I think it's fair to say that there was the bulk of our focus was around bridging the differences on the corporate kicker rainy day fund discussion between the committee bill and between the minority report. There was very little discussion at all. The chairman can refresh my memory if I'm incorrect. Very little discussion at all in terms of the specifics of the corporate minimum tax, or for that matter, the specifics of the estate tax. The stratification you've got is as it was on here in this plan that came out a few weeks ago. There was no discussion about tinkering with that at all. There just wasn't discussion about the specifics of that.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate the talk about the stratification, but as I look at the proposal, the only thing that really, really galls me is the only item on here. There's nothing that says this is the Democrat plan. There's only one item on here, and it says this is the Republican plan. This is what's getting jammed down our throats, and this is what I am objecting to, because that is not the Republican plan that I recall. And I'm really having difficulty with this. I don't know what anybody's experience in the business, in the real business world, is. But when I have gas stations who were selling at $1.25 and 35 cents that are now going to be selling at $3, and no change in volume and no change in net margin profit at the bottom line, when they were selling $25 million before and or $12 million before and are now selling $25 million with the same low margin, a few hundred thousand, but 3% on a $25 million operation. 3%, and that's a Ma and Pa store, and I think the chair has used some numbers around the market share or the marginal shares in grocery stores and those kinds of things. But if I could hold 3% on a $25 million sale, that's a $75,000 profit. And now I'm going to give $50,000, and we're saying, that's the Republican idea. Don't put it on us. And I'm objecting to that. And I cannot. I have businesses that are contacting me as other members. Every member on this committee, I would venture to say, if you've opened up your email in the last 3 or 4 days, has been looking at construction businesses and other kinds of businesses that say, we don't have a 20 or 30% margin. We're not sure what la-la land you've lived in to think that there is that kind of margin out there for businesses that are doing $1 million or $10 million in operation that are really bringing home a 10% or 15% of that so that they can effectively be paying us 10 or 15% back to the state. It just doesn't happen. And so to characterize that the entire plan is someone else's plan except for the word part of it, and that's where it says Republican version, I'm objecting to it because I never saw that portion of it.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Butler, this sheet is actually the agreement that the nine of us signed, because we didn't have obviously we didn't have an LC draft at that point. So this is the one page that came out of that. Frankly, I think the only reason that says Republican version is because trying to capture this entire sheet in one or two lines on that on the summary sheet would have been impossible. But we did not change the corporate minimum tax proposal. Was not one item was changed, not one factor was changed, not one stratification was changed from
and,
what.
And Mr. Chair, I'm telling you right now, we have an opportunity to fix that in committee because it has errors, latent defects. We know about those latent defects right here, right now. We could overcome them. I understand that Revenue has already prepared a statement that will show us how to gradually overcome those latent defects, because you do not go from $25 million to $25 million $1 in sale, but what you double your tax. And that kind of a cliff is a wrong-headed approach.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Any other questions for Representative Hunt? Thank you. Senator Morris, did you want to be heard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, for the record, Frank Morris, State Senator from District 8, Albany and Corvallis. I would like to applaud the bipartisan efforts that have gone into crafting a solution. That's something, in fact, to applaud. So what I would point out to you in this schedule that I is being handed out to you, or what I would say, how does this corporate minimum play out? And there are some very real concerns, I believe, from the business community. And I have my business hat on in testifying before you. What I tried to do was to take the brackets that are being proposed with a minimum tax and what would be the equivalent taxable income at the 6.6% rate that achieves that threshold of when the minimum tax would occur. And then what would be the minimum tax equivalent return on sales? Because what you find, and Representative Butler, what you mentioned, many businesses have a return on sales in that 2-3%, and you know, even a 5% on average would be a handsome return on sales. So what this threshold does is it pushes it up very, very high. Now, legislative revenue has indicated that 32% of our general fund is really driven by business in this state in all forms. Unfortunately, what we have is a misperception within the broader public that business does not pay its fair share. If you look at the reporting of just the C corporations, and that's what this schedule does, it applies only to the C corporations, not the flow-through corporations. If you look at the C corporations, the percent of contribution that comes from the C corporations is much smaller. In the total business community, it's 32%. On the $14 billion that we anticipate in this next revenue, that represents $4.5 billion that's actually coming from the business community. So as we attribute greater responsibility to carry the load of this state, we need to think thoughtfully about how that plays out and is it, in fact, equitable. And I would suggest to you that applying a privileged tax only to a corporate structure that happens to be a C-Corp is not equitable, because what you could have is you could have on the one corner a business that's organized as a sub-S, on the other corner a business that's organized as a C-Corp. Both have the same revenues, both have the same expenses, they have the same margins. One is being tagged with a minimum tax and the other is not. And is that equitable? I think that's a major, major concern. The discussion has already been held within the, in terms of the, within these brackets about the cliff nature. And I think that, Representative Butler speaks very well about how that needs to be fixed. But I would suggest to you that if you look at the very bottom, if you're in that $25 million plus, annual sales, and a $50,000 minimum tax, what that equates to is a taxable income of $757,000. That's a very handsome profit. And that's the threshold. So and that's 3% return on sales. If you go down and say, okay, it's the economy is down and the business is not doing as well, and you have a major drop-off in your return, down to, say, a 1% return on sales, a taxable income of $250,000, that's the equivalent tax rate of 20%. Whereas, on the other hand, a sub-S corporation doing the same thing has a tax rate of 9%. So the conclusion that I reach in looking at this schedule is that it's inequitable and discriminating compared to other corporate structures, and it is grossly inequitable within the schedule itself. And Mr. Chair and colleagues, I understand the honor of a deal. But there must be, I think, within this body, some way that we come back and revisit this issue in a way that does not really damage our business community, because that's the lifeblood of our state. And the way this deal is has some really untoward consequences. And I would encourage you to look thoughtfully at that, and hopefully we can craft something that is, in fact, workable for the state of Oregon. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, colleagues.
Thank you, Senator. Questions of the Senator? Representative Butler.
Thank you. Senator, you've been in business for many years, various kinds of businesses as well. I'm concerned about agriculture, price takers, not price makers. I'm concerned about the aggregate business, where we have to pay high costs to remove and so forth. I'm also concerned about the construction business, your kinds of businesses that you've been involved in, as well as those businesses which have taken advantage of the kinds of child care credits and other kind of credits that we have offered as a state. Maybe can you give us some idea what kind of profit margin a general contractor might be expected to make in a good year versus an average year?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Butler, there were many years that we were feeling pretty good about a 3 or 4% return on sales. And that's just the nature of business. It is not a huge margin. And I would share with you an experience that I had. We had about 200 management employees. No, these are management employees. And the question was asked, what do you think the average return on sales is for business? And do you know what the response was? These were management employees. They said 30 to 50%. Okay? It's not that. Business operates within very, very tight margins. And we need to recognize that in the policies that we set so that, in fact, it does work. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you very much.
We're in work session on House Bill 2031, and I would appreciate a motion to adopt the Dash 1 amendments. Different bill.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2031.
Thank you. Further discussion? I want to let you know that that it's my intention that we complete the agreement that was made by leadership, but I also want you to know that the testimony that we've heard is persuasive to me that we need to look at the brackets that are here, and I would think that later on in the session, with all of the caucuses in agreement, we can do some changes to those that will deal with some of the issues, especially the issues raised by Senator Morris. But because of the nature of the agreement that's been made, I believe we need to proceed with this bill today. And that's just the nature of the time we have and the nature of the agreement that's been made. I'm honor-bound to comply with the agreement that was made by the leaders of Republicans and Democratic caucuses in the building. So that's where we are today. That doesn't mean that we won't entertain further conversation, another bill, or dealing with some of the issues raised by members that have been heard. And I have to say that I have not complied with one agreement that I've made, and I'm going to interrupt myself now and ask Lynn Lundquist if he would like to be heard. Earlier he asked to be heard.
Do we have a motion?
We do. Mm-hmm. He earlier asked to be heard. I think I have the discretion to hear from him now, and I'd like to do that because I indicated earlier that I would do that, and I apologize for not bringing it up before we had a motion on the floor. I think we can do that and then continue with the committee discussion if that's agreeable. Thank you. Mr. Lundquist. Former Representative Lundquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lynn Lundquist, President of the Oregon Business Association. I appreciate the opportunity to, and I'll make this very brief, to make some comments. I did have a conversation with you, and I appreciate the opportunity to come up. First of all, I want to echo what Senator Morris said and some of the others, that we really applaud the fact that we've been able, we being the people of Oregon, I'm going to say, the legislature here as the fulcrum of that, to come to some, to a resolution over a very meaty issue, and that's the future of the state and reserve fund. On this particular bill, I will make it very brief because I think most of what I was going to say has been raised. We certainly know about the cliff effect. And the second thing that I also want to say is the credits. I think that's something Representative Butler mentioned a little bit. That is very significant. You're on the Revenue Committee. You know what you're doing with the renewables and all the credits that are talked about in that. Those renewables, those credits may not be worth anything, because particularly if you're having smaller companies that are will not have the availability to use those credits because they will have to meet the minimum tax, whatever that is in that particular arena. The other last thing I'll say is this, is that this is truly a change in the tax policy on the corporations, because we have always been, our policy has been to follow taxing net income. And the minimum corporate tax, I believe, is, if we look back on the record of the ones that have been brought before this body and passed by unions, the cap was fairly small. It was $5,000. So it was viewed sort of as a fee for the opportunity to participate in the business of Oregon. Okay, it was sort of that minimal kind of fee. This, obviously, with a tenfold increase in that, significantly changes that. So if we were really going to a gross receipts tax, that's what we're doing to a great degree. I'll just finish by saying this. I believe in the political process. I know you're on a very fast track. I understand that. And we are very much aware of that. But, you know, one thing about the political process is the normal course of action gives an opportunity to look at both the primary and the secondary effects. And this is the first hearing that we've had on this bill. And so that was somewhat of a concern as we worked through this process. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I didn't want to belabor the point.
Thank you, Mr. Lundquist. Questions for Mr. Lundquist? Representative Butler?
Thank you. Just one question, Lynn. You've been in business. You've been in agriculture business. You've just sold $999,990 worth of stock in your business, and you're in a C corporation, that stock as in cattle, and somebody comes along and offers you $15 for a couple of pounds of seed. What are you going to say when you know that your tax is going to increase from $500 to $1,000, or from $1,000 to $7,500?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, being a generous person, I just give him the seed.
Yeah, that's a good answer. Thank you, Mr. Lundquist. Now, that's softball. I think we'll move on.
Well said. Well said.
Thank you. Further discussion on the dash ones.
Coming back for more seed next year, too.
All right. Are you ready to vote on the dash ones? Are there objections to the dash ones?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to go ahead and vote one time to approve this deal that was made. And I'm going to vote yes on the appending of the dash one amendments.
Thank you. Are there any objections to the dash ones? Seeing none, the dash ones are adopted. Representative Rosenbaum.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2031 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, I deeply appreciate your comments from the chair a few minutes ago about the desperate need to change this particular schedule of corporate minimum tax. There's nothing that I've heard today that absolutely assures me that that's going to happen. On the other hand, a very advantageous to deal has been made if you're concerned about the stability of Oregon going into any kind of economic upsets. The lack of a rainy day has always been very high on my agenda, and that's really what we're trying to do here. But I'm very disturbed that part of it we're doing on the backs of small C-Corps who didn't get much of a chance to weigh in on this. So I am going to support this motion today, but reserve my right to think differently when it comes to the floor.
Thank you, Representative Berger. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to piggyback on that concept. This is a whole new concept. This is a new day for Oregon. Mm-hmm. When you move, number one, to an alternative minimum tax, and number two, to the concept of a tax on gross revenue. We have never had that before. It becomes the first step towards a sales tax. Think nothing different of it than it is a sales tax in effect. And so because this whole new concept is here, and because we have not had the appropriate testimony on 2031 or the public hearings, I'm going to now tell you very plainly that I am in opposition to this kind of a sales tax and it moving through the House in this fashion. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Representative Rosenbaum, I note that the original bill, House Bill 2031, had a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and I would entertain an additional piece of your motion to remove the subsequent referral. To rescind the subsequent referral.
Yes, I would make that as part of my motion.
Thank you. Representative Rosenbaum moves House Bill 2031 as amended to the floor. With a due pass recommendation and a rescission of the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to echo, I share some of the concerns that are there. I think the comments that it's not a perfect proposal are certainly true, but I also recognize the importance of honoring an agreement that was very difficult to come to. I think that moving towards the first general-purpose rainy day fund in 148 years of Oregon's history is something that we can certainly celebrate. And I feel reassured by the comments of the chair, by the comments of the majority leader, and certainly we've heard from our partner in the Senate that we do have an interest in coming back to fix and smooth out these other issues that are there. So I look forward to supporting this on the floor. I think that we need to look at the benefits that this bipartisan agreement is going to bring to us, and I look forward to coming back to address some of the other issues to make this a more perfect solution.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Rosenberg.
Mr. Chair, I just would echo that comment. I mean, I think what's really appealing about this package is that it does something that Oregonians have wanted for a long time. Well, really more than one thing, but certainly the stability that's provided by a rainy day fund and one that is actually funded is a huge improvement. And I think, too, at least speaking for myself, that after having this $10 corporate minimum and having to talk about it, and, you know, I think sometimes begin to think that it would just be a permanent feature of Oregon's tax policy when it seemed so just plain unfair to average Oregonians, that we finally have a proposal here that does something about that. And even if it's not perfect, and even if it does need some fine-tuning on another day, I think that it is, too, a big improvement in where we've been.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion, Representative Broome?
I just want to make a quick point. I appreciate the hard work that went into the bipartisan deal. I mean, there's a lot of good, faithful effort to get this done. It's too bad, and we knew this then, and we can still say it now, it's too bad that there's sort of this artificial time constraint that's put out there by the Senate bill, but it is what it is. I just want to say for the record that, you know, when we talk about how this bill isn't perfect, and I think we all agree it isn't perfect, we need to be cognizant of the fact that what not being perfect translates to in the real world is some companies potentially going bankrupt because of the way we treat margins. And I'm going to support this, but I want to just once again lend my voice to the other folks who have said we have got to find a solution to the problems that have just percolated up in the last couple of days that we've even today that have percolated up today. We can move this forward. That's great. That's adhering to our bipartisan plan, but we all have to have common faith and common effort to fix the problems which are now so well defined with the discussion we've had. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion? Representative Olson.
Mr. Chair, I sit back and I watch this from a leadership perspective and everything, and I heard what Representative Hunt said about that it's not perfect. I greatly appreciate your position on believing in commitment and honoring an agreement and everything like that, because I believe in that, too. But there's a side of me, too, and down deep inside that bothers me, too, to some degree. And what it is that if it's not perfect, it equates to I am not giving my best. We as legislators must give the people here in Oregon our best. And that's why, I mean, I'll vote for this, but it's not our best. and that bothers me.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. And with that, the House Bill 2031, as amended, is referred to the House with a due pass recommendation and the rescission of the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. I would like Representative Reed and Representative Gelser to carry the bill. Yes?
With pleasure.
Thank you. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2031 and open a work session on House Bill 2707. Note, colleagues, that while we were hearing the summary of the other bill, a new amendment, the Dash 8s, arrived, and I'd like Paul to take just a minute to go over those with you. You'll recall that we've seen this bill before, and this makes some, it replaces the bill with a new bill, in effect, doesn't it? But it contains mostly the same subject. Anyway, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The first thing I'll say is that the Dash A8 amendments don't affect the numbers that I gave you earlier. I actually worked on those earlier. So these amendments don't change the numbers from the A7, which some of you may have seen earlier. The Section 1 of the bill establishes the Rainy Day Fund as an account within the general fund. That's the same as 2707 was set up before. So that allows the Treasury to use those balances in their management of cash flow within the general fund. The triggers in the bill are outlined in sub 2 of Section 1, and it says that it requires a 3/5 vote, similar to the Education Stability Fund, and one of the following findings are required. And those three, little A, little B, and little C, are those same triggers that are in the Education Stability Fund. The one thing that is not here that's in the Education Stability Fund is the governor's declaration of an emergency and a 3/5 vote. That is not in the Dash A8s. On a monthly basis, the bill requires the Department of Administrative Services to calculate general fund interest earnings attributable to the Rainy Day Fund. So the Rainy Day Fund is going to be an account within the general fund, and the treasurer will report to the Department of Administrative Services the total interest earnings on the general fund, on the interest flowing into the general fund. DAS will then make a calculation based on balances how much of that interest should be imputed to the Rainy Day Fund. So the department will do that, and then we'll make a deposit based on that calculation. Sub 4 of Section 1 says that the Legislative Assembly may not appropriate any one biennium more than 2/3 of the amount in Rainy Day Fund. That requirement was in both majority and minority reports in the original 2707. The timing of that is to look at the balance at the beginning of the biennium. So that's the point in time which the 2/3 calculation would be done. And then there's also some language there. We anticipated there may be a time when you're in session and in May or June, and you're thinking, well, we're going to need some allocate some of the Rainy Day Fund money for the next biennium or to balance the budget. Well, then you can use the estimate for that biennium. You won't know precisely what it is, but the estimate would be out there a couple of months, and you'd be able to use that according to the Sub 4. Section 2 is the part that changes the kicker estimate. This is the part that requires this bill to be a 2/3 majority. It moves the estimate to $975 million. As you recall, the estimate that you received last Thursday was $815 million. So this is still a fair amount above that. This is the estimate that was in the committee bill that you approved a couple of weeks ago. If the estimate is less than 900, or if actuals are less than $975 million, An amount of $24.8 million shall be deposited in the general fund. So this is going to take $24.8 million, which is our estimate of the revenue impact of the credit that's in 2031, and deposit it in the fund to leave the general fund harmless with that, the net transaction of those two. The remainder shall be deposited in the Oregon Rainy Day Fund established in Section 1. So if revenues do go all the way up to $975 million, the close of session estimate was $500 million. You could have as much as $450 million go into the rainy day account if it gets that high. Keep in mind, we've only got a few months left of the biennium, so we're not anticipating that, but we know that corporate revenue has surprised us so far this biennium. If the actual amount of revenues actually ends up exceeding that 975 estimate by 2% or more, then you have a calculation and a kicker that would be returned on the amount above the 975. So that would operate as it does under current law. And the difference between the 975 and the 500 close of session estimate, $24.8 million would still go to those corporations with less than $5 million in sales. That $24.8 would go to the general fund to cover that. And the remainder goes into the rainy day fund. Section 4 goes through and does the ending balance calculation that you've talked about before. There are no changes in this from the original committee report. It's 1% of general fund appropriations. The transaction is made for biennium beginning in 2007, beginning on or after July 1, 2007. So the first calculation would be made in the early part of calendar year 2010. Because you'll know what those general fund expenditures were in the prior biennium after about a 6 month lag. You know what your reversions are. Then you'd know what your ending balance is, and you'd take up to 1% and deposit it in the rainy day fund. Section 6 establishes a cap on the rainy day fund of 7.5%. And again, that's different from either one of the committee or minority report you looked at. It's halfway in between. And monies that would otherwise be transferred to the Oregon Rainy Day Fund shall then be deposited into the general fund. So the calculation that will be made is that DAS will look at the cap of 7.5%. If we're below the cap, the entire amount of dollars, whether it be through the ending balance or interest earnings, will be put in the Rainy Day Fund. If you're above the cap, nothing will go into the Rainy Day Fund. It'll all go back or be retained in the general fund. Sub 2 kind of deals a little bit with a situation we thought about where you may be just below the cap. If a transfer puts you above the cap, you still put the full amount in. So that, you know, you're going to have, you may be above the cap for short periods of time. And finally, on Section 7, as we've talked about in the earlier versions, this bill does require an emergency clause because it has to be passed prior to July 1, according to the Constitution, and that's the reason why you don't have various tax-related measures in the same bill, because those cannot have an emergency clause.
Thank you. Discussion. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Paul. Mr. Chair. Paul, Section 1, Subsection 4, on at the top of page 2, has the effect that that if the final calculation comes in as to the amounts of forecasted revenue from corporations in excess of the 300 and let's see, we've got we had been projecting 275 in February, then in March it comes to 315. So this would affect those amounts in excess of the 315 that could be drawn. Is that correct?
You're looking at Section 1, Subsection 4?
On the top of page 2. Right. They're not appropriate. Where it talks about that for biennium has not yet begun, the Assembly may use the base, which is most recent to establish, or the recent estimate of the amount, which is the 315 base, which would be the 500 plus the 315.
I'm sorry. No, this doesn't apply to the kicker calculation, Mr. Vice Chair. This is for when the transfer of interest into the account, and then the subsection 4 is referring to the two-thirds of the amount that can be withdrawn. Remember the two-thirds limit, that you can't take more than two-thirds
out of the account
for any one biennium. So the question becomes, two-thirds of what?
Okay.
And so what section 4 does is it says, well, you've got to have a point in time for the fund balance so you know what you're taking your two-thirds from. And the answer is to use the beginning of the biennium. So if you wanted to, let's say you're in May of 2009, and you wanted to take two-thirds out of the account, you'd have to look at the balance as of July 1, 2007. And then you could say, okay, we want to take another two-thirds out next biennium 9/11. You could use the estimated balance as of July 1, 2009. So it was just a way of giving you a base to calculate that two-thirds on.
For the biennium that has not yet begun.
Yes.
Okay.
Correct. So yeah. you can use an estimate because it hasn't actually occurred. And as you recall, when the Education Stability Fund was created in 2002, it was part of the 2003 budget to rebalance the budget, and then it was also used in the 0305 budget.
Okay, that's all right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion? I think we need a motion to amend the bill by substituting the dash 8s.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Gelser.
I would move adoption of the dash 8 amendments to House Bill 2707.
Representative Gelser moves the adoption of the dash 8 amendments to House Bill 2707. Further discussion? Are there objections to the amendment? Seeing none, it is so ordered. Representative Gelser?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2707 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Gelser moves House Bill 2707 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Representative Berger.
Well, in this case, Mr. Chair, I am very pleased that we have come to terms with sort of the two proposals and are absolutely moving forward with a rainy day system for Oregon that I think people need to be reminded that combined with our Educational Stability Fund will give us a very nice cushion over time, and it will grow only in terms of the economy improving, continuing to improve. So we're back to our other discussion about having healthy business climate improves our economy, which improves our ending fund, which feeds this fund. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Berger. Further discussion, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do wish to tell the committee that I believe that a good rainy day fund floats all boats, and that's certainly what we had understood we would be doing here with regard to 2707 with the dash 8 amendments. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Further?
Let me simply add that those of us who were here in 2002 for five special sessions don't ever want to go through that experience again. And I, for one, am grateful that this bill is going forward. Anything further? If not, please call the roll.
Representative Burton. Aye.
Representative Brennan.
Aye.
Representative Butler.
Aye. Mr.
Manners.
Aye.
Representative
Bolton.
Aye.
Representative
Green.
Aye.
Representative
Bolton.
Aye.
Representative
Bolton. Aye. Chair votes aye. Despite the fact that we've, and the bill passes with, the motion carries with a unanimous vote. Despite the fact that we did pass the bill unanimously, I do not believe it's appropriate to be placed on the consent calendar. And Representative David Edwards will carry. Thank you. And we'll close the work session on House Bill 2707. Thank you very much, committee, for a difficult session today. I appreciate all the effort and work on these bills, and hopefully we will see a different result for this bill coming to the floor soon. If there's nothing further to come before the committee, we are adjourned.
We have one item time.
Yes.